Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's wonderful to have you company for another episode of the show. Now, as a practice owner, one of the challenges over the years that I've faced is around recruitment. You know, where are all the good people kind of thing? And finding the right people, keeping the right people, all that sort of stuff is challenges that I've dealt with myself over the years. And I know that I'm not alone. You know, having spoken to hundreds, maybe even thousands of practice owners over the last decade, I know that lots of practice owners struggle with this. And really at the core of this lies the lack of a recruitment process. And if you don't have a recruitment process, what happens is you are always at the whim of people leaving the practice, then having to recruit in a knee-jerk manner. And what that means is productivity headaches, because when someone leaves, you lose a bit of productivity, you've got to get people on board and it takes a while to get them up to speed and it takes a while for the whole place to hum again. And then if that first person that you've hired doesn't work out, you're kind of back to square one and you're going through this endless cycle of recruitment and it's really frustrating. So the answer is to have a really good recruitment process that allows you to attract the right people into your practice, to offer them a role in a way that allows them to accept it and feel happy and confident about that, to be able to onboard people and, of course, to be able to retain those people really, really well. So having a process that is really well articulated and, importantly, documented is a key asset for the practice. Now, if you get this right, what that allows you to do is to be able to bring people into the practice and have them get up to speed really quickly. So you don't have those productivity dips. It also allows you to keep your best people because one interesting study showed that about 50% of young people are looking for a role this year, a new role this year, which means we're going to be at risk of having people leave our practice. It also represents a recruitment opportunity, of course, but from our point of view, we want to hang on to our best people. So we want to be able to have a system that works time and time and time again. And you know, one of my mentors always says to me, every frustration or bottleneck in a business can be traced back to a deficiency of assets. And in this particular instance, the asset that we're looking to build is a documented recruitment strategy. And I'm joined today by Jackie Strawn from HRTactics.com.au. And she's going to outline the recruitment process that works time and again for any business, including a dental practice. It's got six key steps, and she's going to articulate each of those steps for you. And I'm going to encourage you to take some notes and write down how this is going to work in your practice. But most importantly, some of you will go, well, I've already kind of got this in place. I'm kind of doing this. I'm kind of doing that. And I want to encourage you to go to the next level, to document this, to have it as an asset in your practice, because that's when you get the real value from it. Kind of having it loosely operating in your head doesn't cut the mustard. So please do document this process, have it as an asset in your practice and watch your business fly. Watch your productivity go through the roof. Watch your team retention go through the roof. Watch your stress levels come right down and see how you can enjoy your practice that much more and achieve your goals that much faster. So without any further ado, here's Jackie Strawn from HR Tactics. I hope you enjoyed this conversation as much as I enjoyed recording it. Hey Jackie, welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. It's great to have your company. How's things up in Bris Vegas?
Beautiful one day, perfect the next. No, it's actually raining up here today, Jesse. So we've seen better days.
Oh, fantastic. Well, it is still beautiful up there, even when it rains, because it's nice and warm. Unlike Canberra, where I am today, it's raining and cold. So anyway, rain everywhere. Jackie, I really wanted to invite you onto the podcast because you run a wonderful business called HR Tactics and you've been incredibly well-regarded, well-known and, in fact, well-referred for your acumen around lots of things to do with HR, but particularly in the space of making sure we have really a good recruitment process in place. So today I wanted to kind of talk about what good recruitment looks like because it's a common challenge that lots of practice owners have, lots of business owners in general, but dentists as well. Why is recruitment and getting a good process in place so important?
Okay, I'd answer that with two answers, really. I had one in mind first, but another one, look, firstly, you don't want to be wasting time. You want to have a structured process. You want to save as much time as possible whenever you roll out a implement recruitment process. But secondly, it's a really good structured process is going to give you the best outcome. And the best outcome is a stable, building a stable workforce. So finding the right people, the best people, the best fit for your business, for your practice, and getting them performing quickly and making them want to stay. They wouldn't want to leave because it's a great fit for them. I mean, ultimately, the people in your practice are the lifeblood of your practice. Mm. It's so critical to get that recruitment and onboarding phase right and be able to execute it quickly.
One of the common problems that I hear people talk about is I just can't find good people. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to ask, I'm sure you hear that regularly as well. So my question is there really a shortage of good people, or are we just not looking in the right spot?
Oh gosh, that's that one's not even got one answer. Not even got two answers for that one. Look, I mean, practice owners have probably heard from people that they talk to. It's not just across the dental sector. It's everywhere at the moment. I mean, survey upon survey keeps showing us that the younger workers, we are really dealing with a much different sort of values and choices that they're making. Almost, a survey I read the other day, almost half of employees these days are planning to look for a new role this year.
Wow.
The numbers are so much higher with the Gen Zs and millennials. They're so much more comfortable with job hopping. It's just not seen as a negative that it once was. And the Gen Zs and millennials, they're not afraid to look elsewhere if they're not feeling that their needs are being met. And I mean, massive question. What needs?
What needs, yeah.
And on that, look, there's no doubt that the pay packet is critically important to everyone. I mean, with the cost of living, situation as well. And that's across all generations, the Gen Xs and the boomers. Flexible working hours is right up there, pretty hard for dental practices to offer that, but it is across all generations we're finding. The rewards and recognition type space in HR is a big one for the younger workforce more than the Gen X and baby boomers, and that's rewards and recognition around, good performance, achieving personal milestones and things like that. And the fourth one I'd say is career progression and development, sort of personal development and that well-being space, supporting your employee beyond them being just an employee, moving more into the well-being and mental health. How can we support this person being even better than they were before they came to work for us as a human being, more than just an employee. And that's really big with the younger workers. So that's if I broke it down into four things that they are looking for, it'd be, remuneration, the flexible working hours, rewards and recognition, and career progression and personal development. The younger ones, they do want to get where they're going fast. And if they're not finding these things, then they're going to jump. But as with every human, two humans want very different things often. Mm-hmm. It's about that recruitment process, trying to extract what they are actually looking for, what's important to them as a person, but in their career, in their role with you at the practice, and trying to tailor the employment experience based on that, employee by employee. I mean, luckily with practices, you haven't got thousands of employees like some businesses do, which makes it so much tougher when you've got thousands of employees to run HR initiatives that do retain people. But that is one positive that we're a smaller sector.
Yeah. So I guess coming back to that, if you mentioned about 50% of the current employees are looking, or the younger employees particularly, are looking to change jobs this year. In some ways, that's quite challenging in a sense that if you are employing this cohort of people, you think, well, maybe I'm going to lose half my workforce potentially. But equally, for those looking for team members, it also represents opportunity about how can I be the employer of choice? How can I position my practice to take advantage of this trend? How can I do that? And of course, the answer is going to be to have a great recruitment process in there. So I wanted to, I guess, talk about this process and begin with the idea of, like, it sounds really simple. We've got to have a good recruitment process. But my experience with, you know, talking to lots of practice owners about having a recruitment process is, it begins and ends with placing an ad in Seek, and that's kind of it, right? And so I'd love to get your thoughts on where do practices or businesses in general, I should say, go wrong with their recruitment, and then let's start unpacking what a good recruitment process looks like.
Sure. Okay, first thing I'd say on where practices are possibly going wrong, well, I know some of the ones that we've worked with have gone wrong, is they don't actually have a structured process laid out to follow. So receptionist decides to resign, or dental assistant decides to resign, and it's all knee-jerk, it's all reactive, rather than being able to be have a process all laid out that you can jump to execute. The next thing I'd say is the advert. Now, the whole recruitment process we see is a perfect opportunity to sell your business. Mm-hmm. Obviously not selling them at the moment, or they might become clients. They may change to use your practice for their dental needs, but it's a public relations campaign, a marketing campaign, and not miss that boat. It's a perfect opportunity to really brand your business. The word of mouth that can come from somebody attending an interview or seeing an ad and feeling really, you know, it actually creating some sort of excitement and connection with the business already just from reading the ad can already result in them talking to others about this place. Have you heard about this dental practice? I just went for an interview today at this dental practice. Wow, they're so professional. They've already provided me with this information. So getting that ad at the beginning really clear. But before the ad, there's actually a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of gaining clarity as to what you're really looking for, what's right in your business before you even write the ad. The ad, every word really needs to be tailored to what you need. Mm. No use writing that ad and then getting, oh, great, we've got lots of applicants, and then setting lots of interviews, but they're not actually necessarily the right people sitting in front of you. You're wasting time.
So in marketing, we would talk about, if we were trying to attract patients to the practice, we'd want to run an ad for a patient that speaks to our ideal patient avatar. And listening to what you're saying there, if we're getting the wrong people coming through the door, our ad is speaking to the wrong people, it's attracting the wrong people, it's the wrong bait for the wrong fish kind of routine. So we would then need to have some clarity, I imagine, about who we're trying to attract with our ad. So we've got to understand that avatar for the applicant as well. What's that look like in, you know, what sort of things might you consider if you're thinking about, well, I want to recruit this kind of person? How much detail do you need to know about your ideal applicant?
Well, as much as possible. You're not going to necessarily put all of what you know into the ad. Mm. The quicker you can whittle down that people, recruitment's often about people, it's about more about rejection actually, and, you know, people opting out and not applying because that what they're reading is quite clear as to what, and often it's better to get less applicants but a higher quality. Mm. So it's worth being quite particular in your ad. But a good way to work out, gain clarity as to what you're looking for in the person and the skill set, is to look at your high performers now. Look at what makes them amazing to you. Look at what makes what it is about them and how they operate, how their conduct, their performance, that makes life so much more easy for you. And if that's and try to replicate that wherever possible, and putting it into words in the ad.
But what I find is some of the ads, in fact, a lot of the ads that I read are pretty mundane, pretty boring, and one ad kind of blends into another, into another, into another. And the particular practice that's advertising doesn't kind of stand out in any way. How do you craft an ad in your experience that captures people's imagination or attention and you know, for the right person, it's going to be a scroll-stopping ad, basically. How do we do that?
I would look at, and you might want to include, you know, discuss this with, get feedback from your team members as to what makes this a great place to work.
Mm.
And there might be some team members who you may not ask that question. You may not get, you know, the answers that you're looking for. And trying to put that at the top, you know, near the top of the ad.
Mm.
And speaking, having the ad speak to the reader, not sort of in the third person. You're actually speaking to them. Is, you know, are you looking for to work in a practice, blah, blah, blah. And you're littering that top area of the ad with what some keywords that are going to ideally start creating an emotional response within them. You want to put in there high up, we usually like to put up high up in the ad, start talking about what's in it for them. So that they're quite clearly in those two top areas, got a good idea of what might set this place, this practice apart from where I've worked before. They're starting to maybe subconsciously or consciously build a picture of what it might feel like and look like if I was working there. If you can create, even have a link in the ad where it takes them somewhere else, where you have an opportunity to really pitch and market your practice, but tailored, that content would be tailored to an applicant. Again, you want to be very clear so that these applicants can opt out and go, no, that's not what I want. You don't necessarily want to try and sound great to everybody, you know, so it's particularly about your practice. But obviously getting into the nuts and bolts of what they are going to be doing, putting a few bits and pieces in there about that. And, you know, the ad isn't all that long. You haven't got that much space to write a good ad. So you want to hit them sort of between the eyeballs early.
Yep.
Ideally, yes, if you can have a link that takes them somewhere else where you can have more space and time to be selling the employee experience to them, would be great.
Going back to the ads that I've seen being rather vanilla, they all sound very professional. It's not like they sound, unprofessional, but they're almost professional to the point of having no personality, shall we say.
They are. They're dry, they're boring.
Yeah, really boring. And it's like people are a little afraid to show their sense of humor or the things that make them them. What's an appropriate amount of humor or an appropriate amount of authenticity in an ad? Like, maybe there is no right answer, I don't know, but how do you inject a little bit of yourself or a little bit of your personality into the ad? And then I'll share an ad that I wrote for you some years ago, which was a bit cheeky, and it was mainly as a bit of a fun exercise. But what's the appropriate amount of, you know, personality?
Yeah, you don't want to get too cheeky, but we just try to write them very personably, you know, as though you're talking to one individual at a time, and writing them sort of in a way as you speak to them, rather than, you know, boring sentences like everyone else. You want to try to stand out.
Mm.
There's so many ads out there at the one time. If a candidate is reading, you know, 10 or 15 at the one time, you do want it to read differently, just to catch their eye, catch their attention, and hope that they might, you know, click on that link to read more.
Yeah. So some years ago, Jackie, I wrote two ads, one of which we did publish, and the other one I didn't have the courage to publish because it was a bit too, it was a little bit off the wall. The one that we did publish, though, was around, we were recruiting a dentist, and we were talking about, you know, because you look at all the dental ads and they've got, you know, they're all talking about the fabulous technology they have and all this sort of stuff, and it's become commoditized now, that type of language. So I remember we wrote an ad saying, look, we have all the whiz bang equipment, we've got this and this and that you'd come to expect, but the most important piece of equipment in our practice is the barbecue. Because, you know, on a Friday afternoon, we'll often have a sausage and a beer and or whatever. And that was great because it allowed us to attract the right person who shared that. But the ad that I did write that never saw the light of day was a personal ad written from the dental chair saying how much I was looking for a long-term relationship and, you know, looking for commitment. I'm not after a one-night stand. I don't want this and I don't want that. And, you know, it was meant to be tongue-in-cheek and it was a creative writing exercise, but I didn't have the confidence to put that out there. I thought people might think it was a bit weird. But
I would love to have a look at that sometime and get it to a point where you did feel comfortable, you know, give you some fresh sets of eyes on it.
Yeah. Yeah, it was about, you know, pushing all the right buttons and doing all that sort of stuff. Yeah, it was a little bit tongue in cheek and a little bit of a giggle. But I'll send it through to you. I'll try and dig it out and send it through. So I wanted to come back to the idea of a process. Now, the idea behind a process is it's replicable. It means you're not having to reinvent the wheel every time. So let's talk a bit about what a good recruitment process has in it. What are the steps in that process?
Okay, so first of all, in HR lingo, we call it workforce planning. So that's before we're advertising. Sometimes that is just a quick conversation. Do we really need to rehire a second receptionist? Could we stick with the one we've got and possibly somebody else on the team? Sally said the other day that she wouldn't, if we ever needed some backup help on reception, she might like to learn the role. And so maybe the decision to not recruit is where you go. But that workforce planning, conversations at the beginning and decisions is essential. As I say, even if it's just a quick conversation, but revisit the decision. Then the advert, making sure that you know, is going to market your business as well as possible. When you're going through all the applicants, whittling those down, obviously based on what, you know, the clarity that you have about what you're looking for, but then as quickly as possible, jumping to the phone screening stage. So as quickly as possible, we recommend getting on the phone and becoming a real person with the shortlist. Again, perfect opportunity to market yourself and to also get an idea of how they come across on the phone, because, you know, we're a service business where we've got to how we come across to people is essential. And if they're not going to come across well on a phone, you know, interview as such, but it's not really run as an interview. It's more of a discussion.
Yeah.
And we ask some key, you know, critical questions in that, you know, if they must have certain accreditations and you ask them that and they don't have it, then obviously then they're out. The next stage is the interview. So from that shortlist from the phone screening, then you jump to the interview. And again, having an interview guide that you can pick up for depending on what role it is, with questions already well thought through, and you can run a really professional interview that has a really great opening, you know, the rapport building and the some deal breaker questions at the beginning, and then getting into more behavioral questions, looking at always remembering that the best predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Mm-hmm. So really ideal to have, rather than situational questions, what would you do if this happened? It's more, tell us about a time when something like this has happened. So, you know, about the situation, what you did, you know, what the outcome was there anything that you'd do differently now with the power of hindsight? See if they're a person with a bit of insight and that continuous improvement. You know, oh gosh, yeah, I got that wrong, but you know, I know what to do probably next time. The next stage is one, the that a lot of practices don't do, and that's reference checks. Now, reference checks are a waste of time if you don't do them well, but they are really a really great last step before you make your decision. You can really hone in on some of those sort of red flags and question marks that you had around candidates. Before making the decision, there's one more step that we do use with some practices, mm-hmm. and that is psychometric assessments.
Okay.
Now, there's a lot of different types of psychometric assessments out there, and it's a bit of a tricky area if you're not sure which ones to use, because some measure personality, some measure, you know, the best role in a team for the person. Some are more about behavioral analysis. But using the right psychometric assessments, especially when you've got maybe two candidates or maybe three that you're having difficulty choosing between, we do recommend at that point, we say to the practice owner, look, we recommend we run these assessments. It's just a series of questions for the candidates to fill out. And it really does give another layer of insight into how they might fit, how they might handle the environment, the stress levels. You know, it's very broad. So great insights there. And then really, the decision. But the decision is about the offer. Mm. So that's the final stage where even though you've made the decision, okay, Sally is the best one, you might ring up and Sally says, I've just taken another role. Or Sally might say, well, I've just been offered another role. It's got everything that you're offering, but the salary is higher. So being clear about what your offer is before you make that phone call. But again, it's a perfect time to sell the employment arrangement, the practice, being ready that it's not just, do you want the job?
Yeah.
It's everything. It's how you answer, how you greet them on the phone call. Like, we're really into that five-star type. It doesn't take, it takes just as much time to run a really professional conversation as it does an unprofessional, hardly thought through, unprepared conversation.
Yeah, we spoke about the ad and the positioning of the practice as being marketing. What we're now getting into the fact is when we're making the offer, we're having to, they're selling us, but we're selling ourselves to them as well, right? And so it's a two-way sales process going on. They've come in applying for the job to put their best foot forward, but we as the employer also need to put our best foot forward and show them what's happening. So you're quite right, Sally might have another job elsewhere, but hopefully if we've done well in that interview process, we've done a bit of selling along the way. Yeah, after every sale, there comes a delivery piece as well, right? So, we're talking about recruitment and whatnot here, but in any type of business, you've got to be able to deliver on what you've sold. So is the onboarding process separate to the recruitment process? Obviously, it's a continuum, but do you regard that as part of the recruitment process? Is that part of the deal?
I am so glad you have brought this up, this point. This is a really important thing for me, and I know our team know how important it is, how I see onboarding. Sure, onboarding, you could say, officially starts, most people say it starts from day one. But we don't take that view. We take the view that onboarding actually starts right back when they see the ad.
Yeah.
And then the phone screening, how that goes, how the interview is run, all of those, how all of those are handled can already be or will already be building things like commitment, loyalty, which translate to an intention to stay longer, less absenteeism, So, yes, onboarding to us does start right back at the beginning of the recruitment process, because you might choose your make the offer and they accept the offer. But if they accept it and they come in and they're already thinking, it was a long recruitment process. They asked me to hold off on accepting anything else. I ended up taking this one. I'm taking less money because I've lost the other ones. They took other people because it took me so long to decide. The interview started late. It went way longer than, and then I missed that other appointment, and they've really shot themselves in the foot through in psychologically onboarding the person already.
Mm.
You could say, most people do say the onboarding stage starts from day one, but psychologically not.
Yeah, so there's a whole lot of, I guess, if we use the word persuasion, this is almost like persuasion. We're trying to show how we're going to show up if they take the job. You know, what we do in the interview process, they could probably expect more of. Like, you know, like you said before, past behaviour is a good indicator of future behaviour. So if we're late and tardy in the interview process, it's likely that we'll be late and tardy in the onboarding and delivery process. So I guess what I'm saying is we've got to be consistent and congruent the whole way through. So can we just talk about, okay, let's just assume for the sake of this argument that day one, Sally's come on board, she's accepted the offer. You know, I know we've done all that pre-work, but what does happen on day one? What does a good day one look like, week one look like? What's happening in that world?
Okay, where should I start? So when we talk onboarding, we develop these. This is one of the things that we do for practice owners, is actually develop their onboarding checklist. And we usually have a pre-commencement onboarding checklist and a post-commencement or on-commencement onboarding. So the pre-commencement one is obviously all the paperwork, getting all that sorted out. The on-commencement one is we put every bit of detail in there. So again, it's the practice owner or the receptionist or whoever's in charge of it, the practice manager following the checklist, doesn't have to come up with ideas themselves, right from when the person arrives, how they're greeted, the order that they'll be taken through everything. So that might be showing them around the practice if you didn't do that during the interview phase. So the beginning you want to be quite a positive thing, you know, people smiling, hi, this is Sally just arriving today, you know, for a first day. You want people already to know that Sally was arriving. So they go, oh, you must be Sally. And then somebody else comes around the corner, is this Sally? Oh, she's arrived. Great to see you. Positive, 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 because if you painted that picture, you want to follow through on it, which is what you were just talking about. That then it's really getting into, you know, tucking yourselves away in a room somewhere and going through, making sure you've got the employment contract, the paperwork signed. Mm-hmm. The next critical thing we say is the workplace health and safety induction. So for a dental practice, there's lots of workplace health and safety, depending on, you know, if they're a dental assistant or somebody, they'll have their own, you know, quite large, extensive workplace health and safety induction with all the machinery and stuff, with the equipment. But, you know, you probably won't get into that early on. What we're talking about is the fire exits. All this stuff is in the Workplace Health and Safety Act. Mm. It's a requirement, but we find a lot of dental practices aren't. They don't have the ticks in the boxes that they've even showed them where the first aid kit is, where the emergency exit is. What if all the, you know, we've got electronic doors and all the power goes down, how do we get out?
Yeah.
You know, the emergency button, things like that. The next step we say is talking about the nitty-gritty of the position. So the position description is a critical document during that recruitment process. We're big advocates of that being given right up front. It can be given as early as, say, the phone screening checklist. Somebody is whittled down to shortlisted as potential for an interview. Send it to them then. The earlier that you can get them clear on what's involved in the role, the better, because if it's not what they're looking for, then they opt out and they don't waste your time another 45 minutes with an interview, wasting their time as well and potentially getting through to the offer stage and they haven't even seen the position description. But going through the position description again in that first day, signing off on that they understand it and are willing to, you know, abide by the requirements of the role. So those are the critical things on day one. Although we want to get the person to performance, you know, high performance as quickly as possible, though that first day or two we see as very critical psychologically in mm-hmm. having feel like, you know, they're not just onboarded into the role, but emotionally onboarded into the practice. So it might be showing them where, taking them for a walk at lunchtime to show them where the local, you know, some places they could buy some food, letting them know about general sort of protocols of behaviour in the practice. Some maybe quirky things about the dentist that, you know, oh, just make sure you don't do this, or, you know, but just so they feel ready to be themselves inside the practice. At least from sort of day three or the end of that week, you're starting to really take your hand off being so sort of hand-holding.
Yeah.
We love shadowing as well. We love utilizing shadowing wherever possible early on. Having the person, even though they might be a dental assistant, having them spend whether it's half an hour or half a day with the receptionist, sitting, observing how they greet patients coming in the door, how they walk the patient out the back for their procedure, for the how they introduce people, just observing how we roll here, how it's done here, because we've got to be personable as possible with our patients.
And at the end of that few days or week or whatever time frame it is, what do we want the new employee to be thinking and feeling about the practice?
First of all, I guess that they're so glad that they found the practice and it's a really good fit for them. They want to be feeling clear on how their role fits in with everybody else, mm-hmm. which is shadowing and observing how everyone else is doing it. Another ideal feeling is for them to feel proud of the practice, and where to the point where they would tell others that, you know, I like the barbecue scenario. On the weekend, they're sitting around at a barbecue at friends' places and they're like, wow, I've just finished week one at this new dental practice, and wow. And people are like, well, what's so good about it? And that they've got, you know, a number of things that they would say. They feel proud about how ethical you know, how much of a, I guess, the dental, you know, the standards are. Because compliance is massive. But again, every candidate, every employee is different. You've got somebody who has worked in a practice where it's quite rudimentary and basic, and not really high standards of interaction with the patients. They only a slight, you know, going to another practice, starting to work in another practice where it's only a little bit more special for the patients, might suit them very well. But if you choose them to go into a really high, you know, really five-star type of place, they just probably they're not going to perform. Even though they might say in the interview, this is exactly the place I want to work in, this is exactly it, you know, everything about this place, but looking at where they have worked, it might just be a bit too much for them to perform in the way that and conduct themselves in the way that you want them to.
Yeah, a bit of a bridge too far. Okay, so we've gone through the workforce planning, we've gone through the advertisement, we've gone through the interview process, made the offer. Throughout all of this, we've been doing the pre-onboarding, you know, back from the beginning. We've now onboarded them for the first week or so. I wanted to ask you, you touched on this earlier about team retention. You mentioned earlier in our conversation that 50% of the young people are actively looking for a new job this year. And that's quite disruptive for a business when you lose people. There's obviously productivity issues. There's team morale when you have, you know, rapid turnover. And overall, it can be, I guess, just quite disruptive. So how do we minimize that disruption by improving our retention? I know you spoke about those four things a little while ago. I just wonder if we could kind of pull on a few threads there and see some practical steps that might come out of this and how we wrap that into our almost like a customer experience, but for a team member, their customer experience, what that might look like.
Well, it is about the employee experience, and that's the buzzwords are in the HR sphere for the last couple of years, employee experience. My recommendations would be making sure you're putting growth, their growth, at the heart of what you're offering.
Mm.
Considering what progression path you might be able to offer them, and really seriously looking at growing your own employees before maybe buying in and recruiting. From the outset, getting an understanding of what drives them. It's not easy because, you know, every employee is
different.
You know, you might have two employees that are super high performing, but their values are quite different, and what's driving them, what motivates them could be quite different. So it's not like finance where there's one right answer. So it can be tricky and we don't always get it right. But from the outset, getting an understanding of what drives the individual, what motivated them to apply for the role, things like that are very good questions to get an insight from the beginning. What motivates them? What motivated them to apply for work in your practice as opposed to others? But finding out where they're wanting to go next in their career and see if you can facilitate that for them. And if so many are looking to change roles, see if you can try to get your good employees to change roles within your practice.
Yes.
So that growth mindset that you're committed to them. Another suggestion is looking at ways you can have them feel and see that they mean more to you than just an employee turning up every day. That old school ways of, you know, can't the employee just turn up and be happy with what we're paying them? They're long gone. So ways that you can support them as a person, as a human, beyond just being an employee. A lot of businesses are starting to, the big businesses, Coles and places like that, have been doing this for some time, but having like well-being initiatives, whether they be online modules around, you know, information that sort of supports the employees in being better, the best that they can be. Because we know from so much research that the more the higher levels of well-being in our employees, it benefits the business. It benefits your practice because they are coming to work and will become more productive while they're at work. So things like supporting, say, financial well-being. We can't always give our employees, you know, a pay rise or as much as they'd like, but we might be able to provide them education around money management, or give them tools and know-how and on how to manage their money better. And when we think of well-being, there's financial well-being, physical well-being. Obviously, if they are feeling physically more well, then they're going to, it positively affects performance. Nutritional well-being. Emotional, mental health is so critical as we all know, it's just spoken about so much more, which is so great. We do have a new code of practice, which I'm not sure whether people know about, but around managing psychosocial hazards in the workplace, which there's been so many legislative changes in the workplace health and safety and fair workspace that I'm sure dental practice owners are, or a certain number of them are feeling quite overwhelmed, possibly, about the changes and whether they are actually, where they're sitting as far as complying with them.
I think a lot of them are just unaware of those changes, but we need to bring awareness to them around those changes because it's big.
Yeah, and it might be a good thing for you and I to speak about again when we connect again and deliver things like this for practice owners to learn from, yeah. But we definitely, getting back on that, how can we retain people? I think having them chosen carefully, understanding what's driving them, tailoring that that employee experience to delivering on helping them grow in the business, but also how we can support them as a, you know, broader, in a broader way as an as a person rather than just an employee. And that you can get very creative with them. I mean, we have a wellbeing and safety initiative, which is full of modules, an online training platform, which is full of modules around wellbeing for this very reason, because we can see the value in supporting employees' wellbeing.
Yep.
And psychological safety and the translation, how that translates to higher levels of performance, less absenteeism, stronger levels of commitment and loyalty, longer intention to stay, all those sort of things that are the, you know, what every HR person is trying to deliver for our clients.
So, Jackie, one of the things about a process, and we've got six steps here. So just to go back over these six steps, we've spoken about workforce planning. We've spoken about the advertising process itself. We've spoken about interviewing and making sure we're evaluating candidates along the way. We've spoken about making the offer. We've spoken about the onboarding process. Then we've spoken about proactively retaining the people that we've got on our team. One of the things that I've observed is, you know, again, talking to lots of dentists, is they might say, oh, that all makes sense, Jesse, but I don't have it documented. It's kind of in my head. And my experience with all these sorts of processes is that if it's not documented, it's not really a process and things get lost. So I wanted to talk a bit about the importance of having this documented, because we talk about, in the world that I work in, Jackie, we talk about building assets for the business. So intellectual property assets, physical assets and all those sorts of things. But this to me sounds like a really important intellectual property asset. And my contention is that if we can recruit great team members and hang on to them for the long haul, that absolutely provides us a competitive advantage in the marketplace, because we've got good people staying, doing great work, blah, 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 all that good stuff. So it makes sense to me that we should document this. So can I just talk about the importance of having this documented, what that looks like, because I know there's, I'll come to this in a second, but I don't see many people documenting this.
No. And that's I guess, the gap that we fill often for practice owners. Will come in and actually work on documenting everything so that they are not losing time every time they need to recruit. Mm. They can get those documents, print them off if they need to, and just execute. And it sort of follow the bouncing ball as they run through the process. So we'll design ads for particular roles that they can utilize when they need to, rather than writing something, just using something that they used last time that maybe didn't get them the great outcomes. Mm. But they can use that. The phone screening questions, depending on the role, we'll have a phone screening checklist of questions for reception, for a practice manager, for a dental assistant, for each role. Mm-hmm. That they can use. Interviews, we'll have an interview guide that actually has what they, what we recommend saying at the beginning, like an opening rapport building section, and then getting into the questions. The questions are carefully designed. They'll be different to varying degrees across each role. So you'll have a reception interview guide, mm-hmm. a receptionist interview guide, a practice manager interview guide, a dental assistant interview guide, that sort of idea. A reference checks as well.
Oh, they'll great, be. Yeah.
Yep. Tailored to the position. Again, anyone in the practice could pick it up, and there will be a little bit of tailoring with that document, particularly depending on what red flags or questions might be hovering around about a particular candidate.
Yep.
But again, there'll be spots in there where it's clear, oh, okay, what do I need to put here? And it'll have little notes on, you know, what to put in there, insert in there. Mm-hmm. And then guidelines on making the offer, how we see a professional phone call like that being made. Mm-hmm. I mean, practice owners, whoever's using those documents can use them quite easily by printing them out, looking at them and following through the process. They'll have their own best practice recruitment process without having to put too much thought into it. They'll execute it quite quickly. So yes, if that's what we do for clients, but clients can do this themselves. The practices might have a certain level of HR expertise within their own teams.
Maybe, yeah.
But yes, documenting as much as possible, and even when you're running the interviews and the phone screening, things like that, trying to document as much as possible of what the people say to you. So ideally in the interviews, not just having one person running the interview, somebody else there who can take some notes.
And then documenting the onboarding, like day one, week one, that kind of stuff as well, right?
We do. We do. We love our onboarding checklists. Some of them are pages and pages long. Like one we did recently for a practice. They were very, very 5-star type of practice, and so they have a very, I guess, 5-star onboarding process.
Yeah.
They do take about 2 weeks where they are onboarding, let's say, a dental assistant, before that dental assistant is actually free reign running the show of their, from when they start to finish their shift themselves. That 2 weeks does involve, you know, lots of shadowing. It does have them doing training on all that they've all the different pieces of equipment. Beyond shadowing, then there's the next stage where they're actually using the certain equipment with under the supervision of others.
Yeah.
So that once that dental assistant is off that sort of first 2 weeks, it's very, very unlikely they're going to not know how to do something or not know where to go to find out. Or, yeah, there's also we've built in end of week catch-ups with the dental practice owner to actually keep building the rapport and the connection between them. So because they don't actually get to see them very often. And at the midpoint of the probation period, a check-in there with whoever might be relevant, whoever they report to. And we have set questions at that point now. And again, at the end of probation, the questions in those mid-probation check-in and the end-of-probation meeting, there's quite specific questions in there that often you don't realise why they're in there, but they're actually in there so that if this employment relationship goes belly up in time, you have evidence that you've asked them how about the workload, for example, or certain key indicators about if they've said, yeah, no, everything's great. And then a month down the track, they go off on stress leave saying that the, you know, workload is much too high and da, 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 and then you've gone a phone call with WorkCover and you've got evidence. So we're very big on helping the practice owner have evidence over time that if they need it down the track, we'll help you minimise or eliminate certain risks.
Yeah. So one of the things, ladies and gents, for our listeners, is I'm a big believer that if we go to think about building this system, and I really encourage everyone to build a robust recruitment, onboarding, training system. And our philosophy at Practice Max for the clients that we work with is we always say that become a training institution, become really good at taking someone from being a rookie to being a pro is, as I said a moment ago, a competitive advantage. But to build this system takes a lot of effort, and I know because I've done it, and it's a massive undertaking, but it's a really important undertaking. Once you've got it, you've got it. Really, when you're thinking about whether to do something, there's kind of three things you can have. You can have quality, you can have speed, or you can have price. And one of my early mentors, a guy called Keith Cunningham, who's the original Rich Dad, always used to say, you can have two of those three at any one time, but you can never have all three. And what I mean by that is, if you want to have something that's really good and get it done quickly, then you're going to probably need to pay someone to come in and do that for you. Otherwise, you could have something really good, do it yourself, so you're not paying them, but it's going to take an eon to get there and it never kind of gets lift off or traction and you're forever working on this project. So my encouragement to everyone is to invest in getting this done quickly and done well, because it is a massive force multiplier in your practice. It will accelerate the growth of your practice. It will minimize the stress that you experience as a practice owner. It sets you apart from other practices in the marketplace. And I'd really encourage you to reach out to Jackie at HR Tactics, or if you've got someone you use, that's fine. But if you don't, reach out to Jackie at HR Tactics and get this done. I promise you that if you do this, it'll just accelerate your practice, accelerate your growth, and take a lot of stress off your plate at the same time. So I really would encourage you to do it. So Jackie, if people want to come and find you to get this done and to get this process documented, because yeah, as I said, documenting is key, how do they find you? What's the best place to come and talk to you?
Sure. You can, very easy email to remember, Jackie, well, J-A-C-K-I-E, Jackie at hrtactics.com.au. You can email me directly. Our website, again, www.hrtactics.com.au. Jump on there. There's a few links around the website there which will link to the calendar, and just book in a time. Let's just start the conversation. That's where it starts. Discuss where you're at the moment, what you think the priorities might be, where the pain points are for you, and we'll chat away about that and give you some insights in how we think we might be able to help.
Yeah, lovely. And I think this is a real cornerstone piece of systemization in a practice that just needs to be done. It's like we talk about systemizing operations all the time, but oftentimes this part doesn't get systemized well. So I think, again, ladies and gents, I can't stress this enough, get it documented, because it will save you headaches and hassles in a big way, and as I said, be a really good accelerant. Jackie, I want to say thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and your expertise today. I'm really glad to count you as one of the people I turn to for advice. You've helped me on lots of occasions, and I'm grateful for that. Thank you once again for taking the time today and sharing your insights.
Well, thanks for having me, Jesse. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.